You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Wednesday to you. We appreciate you being here with us on the desk with Christina Long, the managing editor of Hogs Illustrated. We are all dressed up with somewhere to go today. We're going to talk to Hunter Juracek a little bit later today over at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. And we'll play that interview, the Q&A with Hunter from the Sports Club, on tomorrow's podcast, so make sure to tune in for that. Later today, we'll have Olin Buchanan. He's a columnist for TexAgs.com, covers the Aggies as well as anybody. Looking forward to talking to him and kind of getting the temperature on this Arkansas A&M game, his perspective from down there in Central Texas. But first, we're going to go through what Christina wrote for the latest Hogs Illustrated magazine, and it's head-to-head. It's just basically a look at how these two teams match up against one another on Saturday. We're not going to go through all of them. You can read it at Hogs Illustrated Magazine, or it'll be on our website at wholehogsports.com tomorrow. But Christina, let's start with quarterback play. And Marcel Reed and Talen Green feel very similar to me. And it probably shouldn't be that surprising. I don't know when or who by Reed was recruited to Texas A&M, but he did play there last year in Petrino's offense, or at least the watered-down version of it, under Jimbo Fisher. And so it probably shouldn't be too surprising that you've got a couple of quarterbacks here who kind of have similar makeups. Both of them are really good at running the ball. I don't know that either of them are terribly accurate, but it's kind of an interesting matchup here. I would think that you would give the edge to Green based on the fact that he's older. He's played in more games, period. Played in more big games for sure. Reed, he played in the bowl game last year. He came off the bench after their starter was injured in that game, and then he took over for Connor Wegman earlier this year. Green, obviously, in his third year as a starting quarterback. What do you see there?
Yeah, I mean, I did give it to Green mostly because of that experience factor. I think you're right that Green and Reed are very similar. Both, you know, are capable of running around, throwing on the run, making plays like that. But Green just is really young, and he hasn't really played a defense like what he might see against Arkansas. I mean, he played against Florida, played pretty well, you know, completed about 65%. You know, so he did well against Florida, and they did get the win there. And that was kind of a coming out game for him, his first start on the road in the SEC. So that was really impressive to see from him. Then they played Bowling Green, another win, a little bit closer. They won 26-20. Just, you know, started to see some of that kind of youth factor come in with him. And I just think that Green has the higher ceiling, maybe, and maybe the higher floor, which is something that, as I've been writing about Talen Green versus other quarterbacks throughout the season, I've already been kind of working on it with Tennessee, looking ahead to next week. Mm-hmm. It's just when Talen Green, it so much depends on what Talen Green you get. If you get Talen Green at his worst, you have a problem. If you get him at his best, he's better than some of these guys, you know? So it's just, it's hard to know sometimes what you're going to get from him. And some of that is an offensive line issue, a receiver issue. That's something Sam Pittman talked about a lot yesterday, was we have to protect him better. You know, that's, he really feels that once they get that protection locked up, Green will be better as far as completing passes and things like that. So I think it's hard to compare him at times because he can be so different even within one game. So, but I do think he does get the edge here. And I will say, when we talked to Coach Pittman yesterday, there was a little bit of, or Monday, there was a little bit of, you know, they could play Wegman. Mm-hmm. We don't really know his injury status right now. It sounds like he's improving. And so I think technically he's in the mix. I would be surprised if they start Wegman. I think Reed kind of seems to be what signs are pointing to. But Pittman did, when he was talking about it, discuss preparing for both guys.
This is the second year in a row that Wegman may not play against Arkansas. Last year was a foot injury that knocked him out, I think, in the Miami game. This year he's dealing with an AC joint injury in his throwing shoulder. You're right. There's no guarantee who they're going to start. And, I mean, it very well could be Connor Wegman. But as I watched A&M earlier this year, I watched all of their game against Notre Dame. I watched a little bit of them play Florida. Watched a little bit of them play Bowling Green the other night. They look better offensively with Reed. Their offensive coordinator is Colin Klein. And there's been a lot of talk here, obviously, over the last year or so about the fit between the quarterback and the offensive coordinator. And if you didn't see Colin Klein's offense at Kansas State, maybe you remember him playing in the Cotton Bowl against Arkansas in 2012. It's the same offense. I think they called it the Power Cat offense under Bill Snyder. I don't know if it still has that name now that he's at A&M. But it takes a quarterback who can move, and I didn't feel like Wigman was really – it didn't feel like it really fit his strengths. I feel like Wigman's a better drop-back pocket-type passer, and this is just a kind of a different offense that they were asking him to run.
It's kind of interesting. Arkansas has now faced two teams in a row that have some questions with quarterback, yeah, and different reasons, obviously. You know, Wegman got injured, things like that. But and then they have two quarterbacks that are very different. And Arkansas was able to handle both of them last week. You know, Peyton Thorne was the one that was more mobile for Auburn. And then Hank Brown was the one that was more of that, in the pocket kind of guy. And so Arkansas has the experience of dealing with two quarterbacks in one game even. So I think maybe that helps them a little bit as far as preparing for these two guys.
Brown was a redshirt freshman. Yep. Reed is a redshirt freshman. Kind of interesting. I said this a couple of weeks ago. I think Arkansas has the better quarterback situation for this two-game stretch against Auburn and Texas A&M. It's not going to be that way when they play Tennessee next week. Nico Iamaliava is playing an incredible season right now for the Volunteers. In my opinion, he's put himself right there in the discussion to be the considered one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC. But they've got the and I feel like when you've got the kind of schedule that's staring Arkansas in the face with Tennessee, with Ole Miss, with who else?
Texas.
Forget them. You gotta take advantage when you've got the quarterback advantage like I think they've got this week.
Right. That's the thing is you do have to take advantage. And there's been times that they have and times that they haven't. And I think we will continue to see Green and the rest of the offense progress. But they have to make some of those strides now in some of these more winnable games before they get hit with a Tennessee, an Ole Miss, a Texas, LSU, who's to say, things like that. So you have to kind of start to make some of that progress here where you can before you get into some of those fights where you're going to be a pretty significant underdog.
I was talking to an LSU fan who works in our building yesterday, said, you might beat LSU. they're not real. The LSU fan base is not real confident with the Tigers this year. We're mentioning all of this head-to-head matchup. It comes out of Hogs Illustrated. You can stay on top of all the Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. It gives you complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. 20 issues per year, including the basketball preview that comes out next week. Is that
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before the Tennessee game, yeah.
Yeah, so there's the basketball preview next week. It's a big issue. You're not going to want to miss that. Monthly subscription begins at $17. You can join today at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe. Or you can call 479-684-5509, 479-684-5509 for Hogs Illustrated. Running back is an interesting one in this one because you've got Jaquinda Jackson, who leads the SEC in rushing yards. He's second in the SEC in rushing touchdowns. I think he's fifth in yards per carry when you go up to like 30 carries or more. And then on the other side, you've got Le'Veon Moss at Texas A&M, who's had a really good season so far.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I was working on, we work ahead on some of these things. So I was looking at Tennessee in preparation for next week yesterday. And it's funny. We just talked about how Arkansas is facing two similar quarterback situations. They've got two similar running back things where I'm comparing these running backs. And it's like Arkansas has this star in Jaquinda Jackson, the mm-hmm. rushing leader. They give him almost all of the carries, except in very specific situations. And then they're about to face two teams in A&M and Tennessee that have two really good running backs, too. Yeah. I mean, Le'Veon Moss is obviously the leader, but Amari Daniels is not bad either. He's got about 50 yards a game. I mean, that's I think, more than Arkansas has and behind Jackson. So it's interesting. They've got two options there, and they mix them up. But Moss is the star, and we'll talk more about Tennessee later, but they've got two top 10 SEC running backs. So
they've got the leader in touchdowns.
Right. So, yeah, I gave it to Arkansas because of Jackson. I just think it's hard to give, the fifth guy over the top guy, But I think this will be a really interesting test for an Arkansas run defense that has been good, but also a lot of teams haven't had to run the ball that much against Arkansas.
Quarterbacks don't fit into the running back discussion, but perhaps they should, because, and especially in this instance, when you've got Reed, who's a really good runner for A&M, and then Green. I was looking up some stats last night, and listen to this. The best rushing tandem in the SEC right now is Taylen Green and Jaquinda Jackson. Jackson leads the league, 472 rushing yards. He's second with 8 touchdowns. Green, when you adjust his numbers for sacks, which I like to do, because and I've said this before, I don't like the fact that sack yards are tacked on mm-hmm. as rushing yards. So when adjusted for sacks, 50 runs, 393 yards, 4 touchdowns. That's a 7.9 yard average per carry for Green when adjusted for sacks, and that's the best for an SEC player with at least 30 rushing attempts this year. Jackson's second at 6.8 yards per carry. This kind of segues into the conversation about the offensive line. The line for Arkansas has been really good at run blocking, and some of this, you know, with Green, it's just pure freakish athletic ability, getting outside the pocket and doing some things. But there have also been some designed, called quarterback runs for him that I think they blocked up real well. Obviously, I think they've blocked well for Jackson. It's going to get tougher. They're going to play better defensive fronts, better front sevens. But this has been a really good rushing attack for Arkansas. They've got to figure out how to fix their pass protection, though, because I don't know that Green has nearly this many attempts if there's better protection up front in front of him.
Right, and that's the big thing that Sam Pittman's been talking about for 2 or 3 weeks now, is just, you know, he feels good about the offensive line, but he sees where that needs to improve in that pass protection. And it's not just the offensive line either. He's mentioned the running backs and the tight ends needing to improve there too. And so I think the tight ends especially, I feel like, haven't really been tremendous in pass protection so far. And mm-hmm. the tight ends are a whole other question about, even in the receiving game, you know, we've been wondering kind of where's Lucas, what's happening there. But as far as offensive line goes, I gave the edge to Texas A&M because, like you said, both of these offensive lines are blocking for two of the best run games in the SEC. But I do think Texas A&M has been better at protecting their quarterback. And that's essential. We saw it with Auburn a little bit. And when we were talking about the lead up to Auburn, about how when you have a young quarterback, especially, you have to be able to protect him, you know, especially as you get against SEC defenses, you get against these tough environments, you have to give that younger, inexperienced guy as much comfort as you can, as mm-hmm. he's kind of getting used to all of this. And we'll see if A&M, you know, how much success they have with that, especially against an Arkansas defensive line that has needed to improve pass rush. And they got some more pressure last week. It was good to see that. But that was something that we were talking about for weeks leading up to that game, was where is some of this pass rush? Why are they not hitting the quarterback, getting to the quarterback? What's happening there? And they had more success, and that helped them against Auburn. But what will they do against this A&M offensive line?
One more, and you can read Christina's head-to-head analysis at wholehogsports.com on Thursday morning. But special teams.
Yeah, it's both of these teams have had some field goal issues. Texas A&M is 9 of 11. They had two misses from about 40 yards against Florida, so that's kind of what's throwing their numbers off. Not nearly the kind of rough go that Arkansas has had, where they've missed a field goal attempt in every game that they've attempted one. The thing, I keep wrestling with kicker, because I think all of the misses have been from 40 to 49 yards. I think I looked
for
at that
Ramsey.
Yesterday. Yeah, for Ramsey, all of his misses have been from 40 to 49. And a lot of them, I don't know the exact number of them, but a lot of those misses have been after a third down sack.
I think it's happened three times.
Yeah, a third down sack that forced it to be a lot longer than it would have been. And so I'm like, Taylor Green owes Kyle Ramsey an apology.
Well, you know, I mean, like, I didn't feel like the sack was really on
Green
the other day.
No, it's not.
Sometimes
yeah.
it is. You know,
yeah.
he runs around, he's trying to do too much, and
right.
it just goes down. The one the other day, it was just a total, the protection just totally
yeah.
blew up in front of him. He didn't even have a chance to throw that ball away.
Right, right. So it's just, there is, all these stats are always context dependent, you know, but I did
yeah.
give A&M special teams because I also think, and Arkansas has started to work this out, we haven't seen any major like return game blunders like we saw early. And so that was kind of, whenever I would evaluate special teams, that was kind of on my mind about like, okay, have they gotten that ironed out? And I need to see them do it right a few times before I believe that they've figured that out. And I do think that they have. But I think I gave it to A&M in part because the field goal situation is so tough. And this is a game, Arkansas A&M is close so often
yep.
that field goal kicking, I
yep.
mean, it could come down to that.
It did two years
yeah.
ago.
Yeah.
I mean, they called Cam Little's miss the oink doink
yep.
at A&M.
And best kicker in Arkansas history, and he still yep. missed one. You know, you just never know.
I was on a radio show yesterday, and they said, you know, give me three things that you think Arkansas needs to clean up going into they're in SEC play, but going further into the season. I said, I think they've got to have better pass protection. They've got to find another receiver behind Andrew Armstrong. I think that Satania may have taken a good step in that direction the other day at Auburn. And I said, they got to figure out their field goal situation, because I expect them to play more close games this year. And the field goal situation right now is, I feel, very unstable. Maybe that's the right word. Ramsey, he's shown he can do it. I mean, he's got the leg. It's just
what was it, 52, 51?
51 against Oklahoma State. So he's got the leg. He just hasn't shown the consistency. I think he's like 5 for 9 this year. And that's a concern when you're playing a close game. Like I think this could be this weekend against Texas A&M. Here's a trivia question for you, Christina. Oh, when was the last time Arkansas started 2-0 in SEC play?
I looked this up, I think. I wrote this in something. Was it like 2006?
That's right.
Yes.
You got Darren McFadden looking at you right there over your shoulder. 2006. It was the last time Arkansas started 2-0 in SEC play. It's only happened 3 times in program history since they've come over from the Southwest Conference. 1995, they started 3-0. 1998, Houston Nutt's first year, they started 5-0. And 2006, they started 7-0 before losing to LSU in the regular season finale down at Little Rock. The 95 and the 06 teams, they went on to play in the SEC championship game. The 98 team shared an SEC West title with Mississippi State. Mississippi State got to play in the championship game because they beat Arkansas on a field goal in the second to last week of the season. But just 3 times, Arkansas started 2-0. Well, what's interesting is that this is the 3rd time in 4 years that they've had a chance to get to 2-0. They started 1-0 in 21 and 22, and then they lost their next 3 SEC games both years. So it's going to be interesting to see, can they kind of get over that hump to get to 2-0 against A&M? Like I said, a team I think they've got a decent chance to beat.
I do too. I mean, I actually ended up giving Arkansas the advantage in a lot of these positions that I was evaluating. And I think this is a good matchup. They're fairly evenly matched. I think this is totally winnable for Arkansas. I think it kind of depends on if some of those mistakes show up again, if they've cleaned it up, which version of Green we get, things like that, if the offensive line is improving. I totally agree with you on receiver. That's a big question mark for me, is who else besides Andrew Armstrong? And we've seen Satania make some plays. Hopefully he can continue to do that. But who do you have other than Armstrong consistently? Who can you rely on besides him? Because right now he is he's kind of the only super reliable guy.
Yeah, I'd agree.
So
with that.
that's a big concern, I think, going into the heart of this schedule that we talked about all preseason being really hard. And then as the season started, we saw these first two SEC games look more winnable, and we're starting to see some of the other games on the schedule shake out that way, but some of them are just looking harder and harder.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think they can beat Mississippi State.
Yes. If they don't, there are some problems.
they look real bad.
We'll have a lot to talk about.
So this is our Wednesday podcast. Again, Hunter Juracek will be coming up on Thursday. We've got Roddy Jones on the schedule for Friday. He called the game last week on ESPN. Looking forward to getting his take about what he saw from the Razorbacks. And if you didn't catch our Tuesday podcast, you can find it on whatever channel you're listening to us. I would encourage you to go back to that. We had Kelly Rolliard here yesterday. Arkansas's got the number 1 ranked soccer team. She gave some great, great soccer insights we didn't go real into the weeds on Arkansas soccer, but there's a lot of real good information there that if you're kind of wondering about this soccer team and what are they all about, go listen to Kelly yesterday. Also enjoyed having Carlos Collazo on the show from Baseball America yesterday to break down the Razorbacks, who are in BA's top 100 draft prospect list. When we come back, we're going to get into this UNLV quarterback situation and maybe just kind of bigger picture how this affects college sports. But first, a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends over at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. They're located in Uptown Rogers, and the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. So you've got Arkansas, the Razorbacks are in Fayetteville, and then you've got Arkansas West out in Las Vegas, Barry Odom and the bunch. A lot of former Razorbacks are out there. He took some former coaches out there, and obviously there's a lot of players out there. Jalen Catalan's there. Jackson Woodard, maybe the best defensive player in the Mountain West Conference this year, I think he's got a potential maybe to even be an All-American. I was watching their game the other night, Jalen St. John. I was talking to Casey Dick the other day about some favorite players. He said, did you see Manny Powell? Manny Powell was playing for UNLV. Yeah. He got the start the other day. So a lot of Razorback ties there. And UNLV's in the news this morning because their quarterback, Matthew Sluka, says he won't play anymore. He's not playing anymore this year. And so he's quit the team. Happens following a bye week. In a tweet, he said he will utilize his redshirt year and not play again in 2024. He's played in three games, so obviously he hasn't hit that four-game threshold that would make him lose his redshirt season. He says, quote, certain representations were made to me which were not upheld after I enrolled. And now there's some conflicting reporting going on, and we'll get into that first. But, Christina, more than anything, this is just college football in 2024. It's a wild, wild world. And I don't know why anyone would be want to be a head coach in this environment. Like, you know, we talk about Petrino at Arkansas. And interestingly enough, he was supposed to be at UNLV last year and then ended up at A&M and now at Arkansas. Kind of funny how that comes full circle. But if you're a guy like Bobby Petrino, you can just go coach ball as a coordinator and you don't have to deal with all of this other stuff off of the field. And I have a feeling that there's a lot of this kind of stuff going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've heard – this is not the first story we've heard about – I mean, the assumption here is that – he didn't get the NIL money he was promised. That's kind of what we're operating under the assumption. So, and this is not the first story we've heard of players feeling like they were told something that they did not receive, or they were promised a deal and then they did not receive the money. They never got any payments. This is not the first time we've seen that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I believe this is the first time, at least on this level, that we've seen somebody mid-season quit. We've seen guys transfer before the season. We saw what happened with the Florida quarterback that's now at, what, Arizona State.
Yeah.
We saw what happened with that situation, which was a bad deal. But I believe this is the first time we've seen mid-season somebody say, I will not play another game here after, you know, are they 3-0?
They are 3-0.
They're 3-0. I mean, he has not been great. He has yet to complete 50% of his passes in a game.
Mm-hmm.
But UNLV they could get the G5 playoff spot. Like, they are a contender. And so I think that's what's really unfortunate to me about it. I go back and forth on, like, personal opinion and feelings about it, because on its face, it's like he's giving up on his team. He's kind of, you know, messing up their season, a 3-0 season that could be a playoff season. But at the same time, I saw somebody share the sentiment that anybody in any job, and I know that these student athletes are not considered employees right now, but anybody in any job, if I were working somewhere and they weren't giving me the amount of money that I, you know, agreed to be paid, mm-hmm. I would quit. Mm-hmm. I would leave. That's not right. You know, so it's hard. And any coach would do that too. Any coach that wasn't getting the millions of dollars they were promised wouldn't stay. So it's just such a messy situation. It's so strange.
Would you quit? Or would you try to get it worked out behind the scenes?
Well, you do that first.
And
we
don't know enough about the situation to say that they did this or they didn't. But it just feels like, look, you're the starting quarterback for a team that's depending on you, that's got a chance to be in the playoff. They've already beaten Kansas. They've already beaten Houston. They've got some tough games coming up. Syracuse, I think, comes to Las Vegas in a week or two. Obviously, they've got to go through the Mountain West Conference, and it's a steep hill to climb for them to get to the playoff. But they're one of the favorites to get to the playoff, or at least they were before this happened, you know, from teams out of the group of five. The timing of it is very odd to me.
Yeah, that's what's
because
hard.
Because if you're not getting paid, then why don't you take care of that during the preseason?
Right.
Why do you wait until after your bye? Why don't you get it taken care of during the bye week?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I'm not saying it's all on the quarterback. If it is true that he's not getting the money that he was promised, then obviously the school or the collective or somebody, I don't know how all this works. I don't think anybody really does. It's a brave new world out there. But somebody's got to step up and say, hey, look, let's get this taken care of before it's a problem. The reporting that's out there, Carl Reed works for 24/7 Sports. He says that, quote, all financial commitments for UNLV quarterback Matthew Sluka were completely met. But after wins against KU in Houston, Sluka's family hired an agent, and they collectively feel that his market value has increased, per a source. Now, after that came out, more reporting, Pete Thamel of ESPN says his NIL representation, so I guess this would be his agent, told ESPN that he was verbally promised a minimum of $100,000 from a UNLV assistant coach for transferring there. I think he came from Holy Cross. Is that right?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
So once Sluka was there, no effort by the UNLV collective to formalize a contract in that amount. Months after he enrolled, he and his agent made multiple efforts with the staff and the school to address the issue going on. But basically, the story here is that he was not being paid promised. But now one side says he was paid. One side says he's not paid.
And that would
imply... The truth is probably somewhere in the middle.
The Thamel report would imply that somebody said to him, hey, this is what we'll give you. And that was never a formal...
Verbal.
That was never a contract. Yeah.
Verbal.
Get everything in writing, folks.
So this is where I was going. I think all of this underscores the need for contracts between the players and the schools. You don't see this kind of stuff happen in the NFL because they have contracts.
Yeah.
And if a player trying to quit on his team in the middle of the year, you know what happened? Get a huge fine.
Yep.
You know, I mean, they'd come after him for breach of contract, and he would have to give back a certain amount of money. You don't see that in college sports. And so, you know, if we're going to treat college football like a business, which, I mean, we basically are, it's a business. You may not like that it's become a business, but that's what it is now. We treat it like one when it comes to the coaches. We treat it like one when it comes to paying players. Although, you know, here there's some ambiguity about that. You know, let's treat it like one when it comes to holding them responsible. If you start a year, then you've got to finish that year, or there's going to be some sort of financial ramification for you quitting your team. Because, you know, this isn't like the NFL. In the NFL, if you lose a player, you've got a 53-man roster. You can go out and get a free agent, bring them into your camp, try them out. If you like them, you can sign them. This isn't like that. You have to have your roster set by, what, August? You've got to have your players in camp because they've got to be enrolled in school. And so I think that there's got to be some commitment on both ends that's contractual that keeps them in place and protects both sides here. Matthew Sluka, if he's promised $100,000, then you need to have that in writing. But if he commits to UNLV and to be their quarterback, then UNLV needs to have that in writing too. And so it all underscores just the total brokenness of the college system right now, because I don't think this is going to be the last time that we see something like this.
No, and it hurts both sides. It hurts the player to not get what was promised, and it hurts the school to lose their starting quarterback 3 games into what could be an amazing season. I mean, and I think, yeah, you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if we continue to see this. And I don't think anybody is happy with the way this works.
No.
I don't think anybody is cool with the fact that there aren't...
I think coaches
formal...
are miserable.
I'm sure.
I think they're miserable with what they have to put up with. They didn't get into this to be CEOs.
They got into this to coach football. And I don't blame them at all for struggling with that. And so I think I'll be curious how this affects recruiting for UNLV. I know, you know, obviously there's the Barry Odom Arkansas connection. I'll be curious how... I was thinking about that this morning. Like, how are you as a UNLV staff, you're going out and recruiting, what do you say when a parent asks you what happened with this, or how do we know this doesn't happen to us? Like, what do you say? Because there is no contract. You can't say, oh, we're going to do this very formally. What is your response to that? How do you make recruits feel comfortable after this situation?
There's this very cloak and dagger nature of how the collectives work. There's really no understanding. And here's what I think is happening with the collectives. Maybe you've heard different, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but here's what I think is happening. I think players are promised something up front, and there's not funds there to fulfill that promise. And then there is an effort, maybe you can call it frantic, I don't know what you call it, but there is an effort to fundraise to meet that amount as the season goes along. And I think there have probably been some instances, probably a lot of instances, because I've even heard of some, where players say, I'm not getting what I was promised. Where's my money? And the money, you know, the cash may not be on hand at that point in time.
And I don't blame them for being upset about that. And I think that is how it's working. I think it'll, at most schools,
there's no openness about what they're doing.
That's the problem. I think at most schools, that's what's happening, is a player is being promised an amount of money, a deal is being made, except not formally, and then the collective has to go out and try to find that money somewhere, which is crazy. That's insane.
You got to have contracts.
Yeah.
They need a better system. And I think one of the ways you get to that, maybe the house settlement fixes some of this with revenue share. We'll see how that works. Obviously, that's a whole different story to be had, and that's a little bit of a tenable situation with what's going on in the court in Northern District of California. But I think that one of the easy ways that you can prevent something like this from happening is to have contracts that protect the player and what he's owed, and protects the team from having a big personnel problem like this in the middle of the season. Because, again, I don't think this is ending. I think that we're going to see a lot of this kind of stuff as long as the system remains broken. When we come back, Olin Buchanan of TexAgs.com will join us to talk about the Aggies and the Razorbacks this weekend in Arlington. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA. A unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being with us today. We want to tell you about our friends over at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They're committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. We bring Olin Buchanan in now. Olin is, I think we can call him a friend of the program. He's a columnist for TexAgs, one-time Woodland Cowboy, a short-lived Woodland career for Olin. But how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are y'all?
Hey, we're good. Hey, so tell us, what's the feeling down there this week about this Arkansas game?
I think there's a cautious optimism around Texas A&M. I think they feel like they're getting better. But every game against Arkansas, you know, even one time A&M won one game like by 24 points, 6-7 years ago. But you'll remember the game. I mean, it was tight into the fourth quarter, and it seems like A&M stopped Arkansas twice at the goal line. So even the games that looked like A&M won comfortably, they never are. You know, what is there, three overtime games? One game came down to a missed field goal. So, yeah, there's a cautious optimism about A&M playing better, but you just know that when you go up there and face Arkansas, you're going to get Arkansas's best shot, and it's going to be a nail-biter.
Chad Morris put a scare into the Aggies two times. That tells you all you need to know about how this series has been. It's wild how close it's been. I mean, and you know what's interesting to me, Olin, is that – you know, if you look at the record, it's very one-sided, at least since A&M's joined the SEC. But the record, it doesn't come close to really telling the story about how that series has gone.
No, you know, what if Brett Bielema had not decided to kick off after A&M, I mean, after Arkansas just taken the lead in the fourth quarter and let Christian Kirk return them?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, there was a tripping penalty that had probably to do with
So the only tripping penalty in college football that year.
Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and it didn't really factor into the play.
That's right, and it takes away what should have probably been the play that closes out A&M that year. They come back and they win. It's just. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, why has Arkansas not had any luck in this series? And I said, well, they've had plenty of luck. It's been plenty of bad luck. And I feel like A&M's had the good luck.
Well, you know, it's hard to argue, especially when you go back 2 years and Arkansas is about to put the game away early. And KJ, you know, loses the ball at the goal line. It turns into a touchdown the other way. And then it, you know, you lose on a field goal that hits the top. Have you ever seen a field goal hit the top of the crossbar?
No.
Yeah, you know, so just bizarre things happen in the game. You know what? What Arkansas might call bad luck, A&M would say, hey, here's a heads-up defensive play on that KJ Jefferson play. It's I can imagine how frustrating it must be for the Arkansas fans because the A&M experience it every time it seems like they go to Starkville.
Who do you think plays at quarterback Saturday? Is it going to be Reed? Is it going to be Wigman?
I would, if I had to bet, I would say Marcel Reed will start. Connor has that sprained AC joint, and I've never had that injury, but people I know tell me that it typically takes at least a month to get fully recovered. It's been about 3 weeks, so I'm guessing, again, that it's Marcel, but Mike Elko said it'll be a game-time decision.
You know, it was the first game. I watched all of the Notre Dame game back a few weeks ago, and there's all kinds of things that have to get corrected week one. But to me, Wigman didn't look like he was real – I don't know if comfortable is the right word. He looked like an odd fit in Colin Klein's offense. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Reed looks like he's a better fit in what Colin Klein's asking his quarterbacks to do. Your thoughts?
I don't know. I think it was too early. First game in a new system. Does that make him a bad fit? Maybe. I don't know when he got hurt in that game. I don't know. I don't think it's been established exactly when. So I don't know if he was struggling with that shoulder injury or not. Clearly, he was terrible in that game. I'm sure a good Notre Dame defense had something to do with that. But, you know, he had some plays to be made that he just flat didn't make that we've seen him make. So I don't, your theory that he's just not as good a fit for that offense, you know, that could be the case. But we've seen in a different offense, we've seen Connor be good. And I don't think they're going to make a judgment on him based on that one horrific game. And it was horrific. But I'll say this, it does seem, whether or not it's better suited or it's not suited for Connor, it does seem to be well suited for Marcel's skills.
I just think about KJ Jefferson at Arkansas. We saw last year when Dan Enos came in here, that it just turned out to be a horrible fit, his skill set with that coordinator. But when Kendall Briles was here, KJ Jefferson was putting up numbers that were as good as a lot of quarterbacks ever at Arkansas. And now you see KJ go down to Central Florida and he's playing a Malzahn's offense and seems to be having some success there. I think there's something to be said about the fit between a quarterback and an offensive coordinator. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but it just looks to me like Reed and Colin Klein's offense looks like it's better suited for him.
I'm just saying that we've seen – I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying we've seen Connor in one game against a good defense where he may or may not have gotten hurt. You may be right. Yeah. I just don't know if I want to – make that assumption based on 1.5 games.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Arkansas and A&M, Olin, it seems like they've kind of had similar seasons to this point. I mean, they both beat a bad SEC team. A&M beat Florida. Arkansas beat Auburn last week. They've got a Power 4 game that they probably think they could have or should have won. Arkansas with Oklahoma State, A&M with Notre Dame. And then it's kind of interesting, even their last non-SEC game, A&M's a 22.5-point favorite to beat Bowling Green. They win by 6. Arkansas is a 22.5 favorite to beat UAB, and they win by 10. It just seems like it's kind of like they beat the FCS team that they played, you know, with no problems. It's been very mirror image, it feels like, the way the season's gone for them to this point.
And that's, quite frankly, a reason for A&M to be somewhat concerned because, let's face it, there have been some years going into this game where A&M looked like the significantly better team, only to struggle against Arkansas, right? Yep. So it's a huge game for both teams. I think if you win, if you're A&M, if you win, then you're 4-1 with Missouri coming to town next week, and a chance to, if you could pull that one off, people start talking about you as a playoff contender. If you lose, the Missouri game doesn't even matter.
What's different? I didn't mean to interrupt you. What's different about Mike Elko and Jimbo Fisher and maybe the program this year versus where it was a year ago?
Well, first of all, it's a hell of a lot easier to transcribe the quotes.
I've always felt like you're transcribing an auctioneer when you talk to Jimbo.
Auctioneers tell Jimbo to slow down. I think this may sound like, you know, typical stuff that you hear from a new coach, but I think there really is just a different, I hate to use the word culture, mm-hmm. a different accountability, right? Because there are guys that could be playing, they have the ability that they could make a contribution, that maybe there's been some things going on off the field or in practice. And they say, well, you know, if you're not going to give 100%, you're not going to play. And I'll tell you this, I heard this story in the off season that there was a player, a significant player that, they brought in Tommy Moffitt as the strength conditioning coach. And the guy just didn't want to work out that day. And he said, well, I'm not working out. And he went to his apartment and they sent somebody there and said, okay, you get to make a choice right now. You're either going to go back and work out or you're going to go home to stay. I think there were some entitlement issues under Jimbo. It was just, hey, get the good guy in, and then we'll just worry about him, what he does on Saturday.
I haven't covered Mike Elko, and you haven't covered Sam Pittman, but you can kind of get a sense of a person through their press conferences. It feels like they're very similar personalities.
Yeah, I would think that just by what I've seen, that covering Sam is – probably as enjoyable as it is for, you know, working with any college coach. It's never easy, but he sure seems to be a guy that's cooperative and, not combative. We've dealt with some of that here before. Mike, so far, look, I'll tell you this, Jimbo, the first couple of years, he was the best guy to work with that you could find. So, you know, jury's always out. But mm-hmm. Mike so far has, you know, he's not trying to be your best friend, but he's not trying to be your adversary. He's just a guy that comes in and says, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's who's hurt. Here's who's playing well. Now, what's your questions? And I really haven't noticed him dodging any other than when we ask about the status of the quarterbacks, and he just says, you know, game time decision.
One of the storylines this week is that Bobby Petrino is Arkansas's offensive coordinator, was down there last year. Explain to people who aren't familiar with that situation how he was utilized last year, or maybe underutilized is the right word.
Yeah, underutilized for sure. Here's my analogy. My analogy is it was like asking Bobby Flay to come and cook dinner for you, but you tell him, yeah, we want you to cook the dinner, but we're going to provide the ingredients. Here's the recipe. Here's the utensils. Don't stray from anything that we've already used. Well, then what the hell's what's going to be different? Bobby came to call Jimbo's plays, and that was that. I think that I'm sure that Bobby wants to put up a lot of points against everybody, but I would imagine he's hoping to put up a lot of points against A&M, not because he has any animosity toward A&M. I think Aggies treated him well, mm-hmm. but I think he probably likes to show, hey, this is what I could have done for you had I been given the opportunity.
Is the defensive personnel similar there to last year?
Yeah. I think the strength of the defense is still in the defensive line. They do miss Edgerrin Cooper. Who wouldn't? He's an All-American linebacker, so they're not as good there. But they brought in – I think they got better in the secondary, even though they still have a tendency to give up some big plays. It does hurt that Tyreek Chappelle, who's their starting nickelback, you know, they lost him for the year last week.
I'm sure the scheme is different from what DJ Durkin was running last year with Elko coming in. But from a – do you think maybe Petrino the fact that he's seen some of these defensive players in practice, do you think there's any type of tendencies that he might be able to exploit on Saturday? Is that something that's been brought up at all?
No, it hadn't been brought up. I guess it's possible. But once again, we're talking about there is some different there is some different personnel. Nick Scorton, the Big Ten sack leader last year, transferred in. Will Lee from Kansas State. Got a guy from San Diego State in the secondary. So linebackers from Florida. So he may not be that familiar with everybody. Just a couple. I'm sure he knows what Shamar Turner can do and what Shamar Stewart can do and Torian York. But beyond that, he may not be as familiar with the personnel. And again, like you mentioned before, a different scheme, though, quite frankly, he's probably seen any scheme that anybody wants to throw out at him.
Last year of the game in Arlington, it's coming back to campus beginning next year when the Aggies come to Fayetteville. Why do you think this series was initially scheduled, Olin, and why do you think it has aged so poorly within these two fan bases?
I don't know. Quite frankly, I don't know why A&M would have agreed to it. I know Arkansas likes to recruit Texas. At least they did, except for those Rip Bielema years. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know why you would give them a game, guaranteed in the state every year. But okay, it was fun. It's an easy drive, all those things. So I don't know who was the athletic director at the time?
Bill Byrne was there and Jeff Long was in Arkansas.
Yeah. So I don't know what Bill Byrne was thinking, why they thought that was a good idea, unless they just, Jerry made it financially make sense. But I do think, and I think most Aggies, in fact, the majority that I've talked to, think college football's best on campus.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I'm looking forward to a drive up to, maybe it'll be a flight, I don't know, but a trip up to Fayetteville next year.
It's when they scheduled this too, a few things I think about is, number one, it was like they scheduled this before AT&T Stadium had even opened. This was scheduled in 2008. The stadium opened in 2009. They played there like a month after the Cowboys played their first game there. It was before Kyle Field was renovated. It was before Razorback Stadium was renovated. It was just a different time. Neutral site games were kind of the rage there. And, here's the deal. If Bill Byrne didn't give Arkansas an opportunity to come down there and play, Jerry Jones was going to get the Razorbacks into that stadium somehow. So maybe Texas Tech does. Maybe Baylor does. They were going to get somebody contracted there to play them for 10 years. What's interesting to me, though, Olin, is the fact that, the series in Arlington went on hiatus for a couple of years. It went back to the campuses during the Manziel years for A&M 2012 and 2013. And then the two sides, they basically restructured the contract. It was going to be 10 years from 2009 to 18, and then they restructured the contract and they make it 11 years from 2014 to 24. That's the part that's always interesting to me, because at that point when they went back down there, it felt like public sentiment was already starting to turn.
Well, how do the people up in Arkansas feel? Would they prefer
probably
to have
about
the game?
About the way you do. I mean, probably about the way the people in College Station do. I think. The feeling here is the same as it is anywhere else. If you're a season ticket holder, you want to have the best games on your campus. You don't want to say, hey, we're never going to see A&M play on our home field. So I think they feel about the same way you do.
Yeah, I enjoy going up there. It's a nice trip. It's not too far. Great fans, they're not going to necessarily be cordial to the visitor, but it's a great atmosphere. So that's just the way it's supposed to be. That's the way college football is supposed to be. And it's, look, anytime Arkansas and A&M is playing, no matter where it is, our College Station, Fayetteville, Arlington, it's going to be fun. People are going to turn out. But I just think college football is best when it's on campus.
I can't talk to you without bringing up baseball. Has the Jim Schlossnagel hate subsided any?
Oh, no. No. That, are you kidding me? That will never subside. He committed the cardinal sin that that now he's the coach who shall not be named.
How bizarre was that? Because you go from covering him in Omaha for a national championship, and like 3 days later, you're driving your car 100 miles to the west over to Austin to see him in burnt orange.
Yeah, it was here's the deal, though. It's not like the rumors hadn't been going on for months, right? Mm-hmm. And so he was asked about it over and over again. And first he denied it. And then it was like, hey, how many times do I have to keep denying that? I can't just keep responding to that. And say, yeah, but coach, it's not going away. Well, I don't know what to tell you. And again, you saw it the night that they lost to Tennessee for the, mm-hmm. in the championship. He said, I came to Texas A&M for it to, with the thought that it would be my last job. And that hasn't changed. So in 24 hours, it changed. And quite frankly, you know, we've gotten plenty of information that decision had been made well before the College World Series.
That was something I was hearing even when I was in College Station. And I mean, I'm not plugged in down there or anything, but it was, you kind of hear the whispers down there in late May.
Yeah, I had a guy who has nothing to do with Texas A&M. He's just a college, a Major League Baseball scout for a National League team. And he was calling me up and said, hey, dude, let me tell you something. We knew that this was a done deal in May. And that it was common knowledge in their circle. So there you go. Look, he's going to do what he's going to do. I think the Aggies, they feel good about Michael Early. They just kind of wish that Texas was coming to College Station this year. That would have been a heck of a, you know, heck of a series. But yeah. They'll see what they can do in Austin.
I know we got the Southwest Classic coming up, but I'm already looking forward to Easter weekend when A&M comes up to Fayetteville. That should be a great, great baseball series when those two get together, because I think they both have got excellent teams in 2025.
Well, Arkansas is always excellent, right? And under Van Horn, I mean, I don't know that I've ever known them to have a bad team. And A&M, quite frankly, I don't know if they'll be ranked a preseason number one, but I'd be surprised if they're not a preseason top five.
Yeah, I think most of the people I've talked to, they say it's either going to be A&M and LSU or LSU then A&M. That's kind of one and two in most people's minds. Olin, appreciate your time. Looking forward to seeing you down in Dallas this weekend.
All right, look forward to seeing you. Thanks for having me.
All right, Olin Buchanan from TexAgs.com does a great job covering the Aggies. We appreciate you being with us today on our podcast. Again, we'll be back tomorrow as we talk with Hunter Yurecek, the Arkansas Athletics Director. Replay that Q&A from our luncheon at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club today. And on Friday, Roddy Jones from ESPN will join us. Until then, hope you'll come to our website at wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everyone.